Maybe she had been. Maybe she needed to believe that to make herself think it was true. Because otherwise, she'd have to live the rest of her life down here knowing she'd once been something so much more than one of Zerka's grubby tools. That she'd been able to fly between the stars. Better to convince herself that this, the work, the pit, was all there ever was, all there ever had been, all there ever would be. How long would it take to convince herself of that? Years, Rahara figured. But it could happen. Would happen. She'd forget about her life before.
Rahara!
Startled, she nearly missed the compressor lock. As her hands pressed it down automatically, she looked up to see a face peering through a thicket of pipes.
Pax? Yes, of course it's me!
He sighed in exasperation. Were you perhaps expecting the Chancellor instead? Rahara began to laugh at the same moment her eyes filled with tears. Maybe she could have imagined a life as a jewel thief, but she could never have dreamed up anyone like Pax Marifer. A few other people working nearby, a human and two Celestins, had noticed Pax too. One of the Celestins surreptitiously pulled the gear that would stall the compressor line. Usually that was done to take care of minor malfunctions, so the floor supervisor wouldn't pay any attention at first. The Celestin had bought them a minute. Rahara looked at her in gratitude before turning back to Pax.
How did you get here?
The Jedi actually made themselves useful to us for a change. Now come on.
The shock of it hit her.
You're breaking me out?
Why else would I ever be here? To take in the scenic view?
Pax gestured at the dark, dank maze of machinery in the pit.
I know. It's just...
Rahara tried to wrap her head around it.
You said you don't put your neck out for me and don't expect me to do it for you. That would be irrational.
Pax's expression gentled.
So I said. But it turns out there are things that matter much more than rationality.
He reached out with one hand, and she took it. But when he pulled her toward him, Rahara resisted.
No!
Yes, yes, I know it's very dangerous. Therein lies the heroic nature of my escapade. But there's no other way to leave this place than to, you know, leave!
Rahara looked back at the Celestin who had helped her. The others working on her section of the line. Farther down the row, more humans, a few Duros, and an Abednido. A dozen species within sight, maybe 30 or more represented here, adding up to hundreds of enslaved people, all of whom were trapped just as she had been trapped. Who had never been able to imagine what they might do with a life that was their own.
If I'm getting out of here, she said, so are they.
You mean, instead of sneaking out safely, we're going to lead a slave uprising?
Pax considered this, then smiled.
Excellent!
On the Merix, Obi-Wan had very little to do but wait. The ship's sensors weren't sharp enough to pierce through the leverage. While he could have signaled the Corvette to talk with Qui-Gon, that stood a very good chance of alerting Zerka to his presence. He decided to study the Merix. If he was going to have to pilot it soon, he might as well get to know its quirks. The engines, controls, and such were very much what he would have expected. No Gozanti-class freighter could ever be highly maneuverable, but Pax's modifications helped. The only real surprise was how well the lower cargo hold had been retrofitted as a berth for the facet.
A Nivex-class starfighter, he thought, looking down at his coppery surface. Siren make, I think, but Pax will have modified that too.
Obi-Wan dropped down into the cargo hold to take a better look, which was when alarm klaxons began to ring inside the leverage. Obi-Wan startled. The quickest way to tap into intra-ship communications was through the facet, so he jumped inside. He turned on the engines and scanned for comms, just in time to hear...
Disturbances on lower levels! Lockdown access bays immediately.
Like the access bay I'm in right now? He muttered. Splendid. But Obi-Wan smiled at the very strong probability that these disturbances were the work of Rahara and Pax. He pressed the control for extra ship visuals. As he'd feared, Zerka GA-97 and Unipod droids were already rolling into the bay to lock all controls, including those for the doors the Merricks would need to get out of here. The droids would have to go. Obi-Wan put his hand on his lightsaber, then remembered the Kolen sabotage. There was no telling what his lightsaber was good for right now, which meant he'd be a fool to take it into combat.
Wait, he thought. Why am I looking for weapons when I'm sitting in one?
The Zerka droids halted the moment the lower doors of the Merricks opened and the facet dropped down and began to fire. Obi-Wan targeted the first Unipod, then the second, blowing them to pieces instantly. This would set off a security alarm, but since the leverage was already on high alert due to the revolt, probably Zerka's response would be slowed. His console lit up with the words, Auto-pursuit initiated.
No, I don't want...
Obi-Wan's eyes widened as the facet not only targeted weapons without him, but began to move forward.
How do I shut this off?
He had no time to find out. The facet zoomed ahead, targeting droid after droid. Obi-Wan could steer the ship, but he couldn't stop it. Not even as it flew toward the inner doors. His hands clenched the controls as his starfighter zipped into the open corridor. Now he was in a tunnel, one that twisted and turned, with no more than a meter of safety on each side.
You always wanted a real flying challenge,
Obi-Wan told himself as he took a sharp left turn, narrowly avoiding destruction.
Here it is.
Another voice inside him answered,
I take it back!
But it was too late to do anything but plunge on. Rahara had never enjoyed any moment in a Zerka vessel as much as the one when she swung a metal bar straight into a control panel. The sparks that shot across the room looked like fireworks. All around her, the newly freed were allowing themselves to celebrate through sheer pandemonium. Every panel that could be pried off was. The others were smashed. Whatever tools and gear they could scavenge were being distributed among the crowd, which became more and more armed by the second.
As charming and well-deserved as this orgy of destruction is,
Peck shouted over the din,
it shouldn't take precedence above escaping from the leverage!
Assuming they could escape, Rahara had heard the commands to shut down access bays. Other counterinsurgent moves would follow. Zerka knew how to put down uprisings. As much as Rahara wanted to believe they'd get away, she knew that this was equally likely to end in bloodshed. But if Pax could hope, she would too. She grabbed his hand and began leading the way forward, faster and faster, until she broke into a run.
Master Jedi!
The Corvette's comm officer pointed to a screen for Qui-Gon to read.
This is what just came over intership on the leverage.
At the moment, the Corvette was fighting a losing battle to keep the tethered royal ship from angling itself to fire on the Zerka ship. They could hold the Righteous in place, more or less, but could not keep the ship from turning within that place. Already, they were within range of the leverage, and the Corvette couldn't tow it away fast enough. So Qui-Gon's mind was preoccupied when he looked down at the comm officer's panel, but not after he'd read what was there.
A slave uprising? Thought the plan was for Obi-Wan and your guy to slip in, slip out, nice and quiet, Rail said. He'd been pacing the floor ever since Queen Fanry's Hollow. The plan appears to have altered.
Qui-Gon considered the possibilities. He asked the comm officer,
Is the Righteous able to intercept those messages as well?
Quite possibly, sir. Though I don't know if they're doing so.
Let's find out. Put me in touch with the Queen again.
Inwardly, he thought, I hope Obi-Wan's all right.
As the facet plunged through the twisting corridors at intense speed, Obi-Wan had given up trying to come up with any coherent thoughts. It made more sense to just yell, "Oh!"
4 minutes to targeting range, said the weapons officer.
Excellent. Fanry settled into the captain's chair. Her feet still didn't touch the floor. She'd have to have it lowered. Keep pushing back against our former regent, would you? Let him try his hardest to stop us and fail.
The comm officer said,
The Jedi's corvette is signaling us again.
We have nothing to say to Avaros, Fanry snapped.
It's the other one, Qui-Gon Jinn.
She respected this Jedi, who had stood up to Zerka, but she was fast losing her patience with him. Let us humor him one last time.
Jinn appeared via Hollow, seeming to stand on her own bridge.
Your Majesty, may I call your attention to what's happening within the leverage?
What's happening to the leverage is that it's going to be destroyed.
The Righteous wasn't as large as the Zerka ship, but it was far better armed, as she was about to demonstrate.
Not to it, within it. Turn your sensors to their intra-ship communications. You do have all the Zerka codes, don't you? And see for yourself.
So, they'd done a search and realized how much Zerka intel her team had amassed. No matter, Fanry decided. The comm officer obeyed Jin's suggestion without waiting for Fanry's order, a breach of protocol she would address later. But her concerns about that faded when she saw the word uprising.
Your Majesty!
Katie lit up, happier than Fanry had ever seen her.
The people inside! They're trying to get away! We could help them!
Fanry laughed.
And let Zerka go? Hardly.
We have sworn to show them no mercy, and we shall not.
Katie's face fell.
Fanry, it's Rael.
Her old regent appeared in the hollow. Just the sight of him angered her almost past the point of reason. But she still heard him when he said,
You can punish Zerka, or you can save innocent lives. You have one choice. Make it a good one.
She hadn't listened to Rael Avaros in years and didn't intend to start now.
Weapons officer!
Yes, your majesty.
The officer's voice was strangely hoarse. Fanry opened her mouth to give the order to fire, then stopped when the cold muzzle of a blaster pressed against her temple.
I helped you do this,
Katie said, trembling even as she held the gun on her queen.
No, I made this possible. Planting the slicer dart, helping sabotage the crab droid. You made the plans, but I had to do the hard work. And I did it all because I thought that getting rid of Zerka meant getting rid of slavery. But this is just about you, isn't it? About having power for yourself.
It was scary having a weapon pointed at her head. Fanry somehow had never realized that before. Via Hollow, she could see her fear reflected in Rael Avaros's expression. How dare he pretend to truly care about her? And why weren't any of the bridge officers coming to her aid? But Fanry ruled over Katie. Always had, always would. Some things could never be changed.
As your queen, she said evenly, I order you to put your weapon away.
Katie shook her head no.
Looks like we're having our second revolution of the day.
Qui-Gon was relieved to know Fanry had been overthrown, at least long enough to prevent vast bloodshed. But the real battle was still going on inside the leverage. He had to make sure the right side won. As soon as the hollow from the Righteous faded out, he connected to the leverage again. When Merrit Kahl reappeared, she looked more frazzled than before.
Yes, yes, the Queen's no longer a problem, she snapped. If you had anything to do with that, thank you, but I have other issues to deal with.
Such as setting free the people currently rebelling within your ship, Qui-Gon said. The former slaves.
How many more times must I tell you?
Kahl asked.
They will always be slaves.
The situation has changed, Supervisor Kahl, as you would know if you were better versed in Republic jurisprudence. During extreme political upheaval, any group found to be imprisoned against their will, without having been convicted or accused of any offense against the law, shall be liberated. Anyone responsible for imprisoning these people is committing a criminal act. Kahl scoffed.
This is one day of problems, Jedi. The Crown Princess is now Queen as planned, even if the particulars are unfortunately very difficult. Who's to say that this counts as extreme upheaval?
Only a designated representative of the Republic can make such a finding, Qui-Gon said. Such as Obi-Wan Kenobi. Granted, Obi-Wan hasn't yet done so, but he'd be happy to once he gets the chance. And as it happens, Her Majesty has already been overthrown.
You're twisting the law to suit your own purposes. You think this momentary disadvantage will make me agree to anything?
Merrit Kahl rose to her feet, apparently ready to leave the bridge and take on the uprising herself. As the doors to the wide outer corridor opened, she said,
I promise you, Jin, this will not stand longer than...
Her voice broke off and turned into a scream. Qui-Gon's eyes widened as a starfighter inside the Zerka ship barreled through the outer corridor, flying straight onto the bridge. Zerka officers, including Kahl, fell to the ground. The starfighter then landed, snapping chairs and consoles as its weight settled onto the deck. Was it his imagination? Or did that ship look familiar? Qui-Gon's astonishment peaked when the starfighter's hatch opened to reveal Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan's face was pale, his stare somewhat dazed. He looked at the hollow for a long moment, taking gulping breaths, then ventured a weak smile.
I don't suppose you believe I meant to do this?
No. Qui-Gon began to smile. But as it turns out, you're right on time. Chapter 38. You flew through the ship's corridors.
Qui-Gon put one arm around Obi-Wan's shoulders as they walked away from the Corvette's docking bay. Behind them, Rahara Wick and Pax Marifer were helping the ship's crew register approximately 300 former units of sentient property as refugees.
Congratulations on being in one piece.
Obi-Wan still appeared to be in shock.
It was terrible, he said, his eyes staring fixedly ahead. I don't ever want to fly again. Ever.
Oh, come now, Padawan.
I hate flying.
You're only shaken up, Qui-Gon said. That feeling will pass.
No, it won't.
We'll see. For the time being, we have enough to do on the ground. On Pygel.
Within 2 days, faced with public outrage over the Blackguards and the judicial ruling that a coronation by violence was illegal, Queen Fanri agreed to abdicate in favor of a distant cousin. The new Queen Lamia's reign lasted only a few hours, just long enough to sign new treaties that set up a democratic assembly with ample representation for lunar citizens, abolished slavery in the system, freed any enslaved persons brought to the system, made possible the new Pygel hyperspace corridor, and last of all, the item that had to go last, ended the Pajali monarchy forever. There was, however, a nominal head of state, a governor who would help focus the assembly's efforts. As for my first act,
said Governor Orth, as she sat at her new desk.
I intend to cancel any and all contracts the government has with Zerka Corporation.
You never did care for them, Qui-Gon recalled.
Nor did I make any secret of it. Yet the princess never realized we had so much in common. If she would have confided in more of us, she might have realized how much support there was for standing up to the company. But of course Zerka wasn't the point. Only the excuse that let her feel righteous about seizing absolute power.
Orth sighed, and for a moment her expression became wistful. But then she was back to her usual brisk self.
Princess Fanry remains under house arrest, which in a palace is scarcely a harsh punishment.
How is she taking that?
Not very well. Honestly, I think it's begun to hit her, the weight of some of what she's done. Darren pulled through, and she's asked to see him to apologize.
Orth shook her head.
Poor man. He wanted nothing to do with the Blackguards. But he'd sworn to obey the princess in all things, and he held true to his oath. It nearly killed him.
Qui-Gon asked,
How long does Fanry remain under arrest?
4 years. Although she was briefly head of state, she's legally a minor for all other purposes. So her punishment ends when she turns 18. After that, I'm thinking a university on a faraway planet sounds like the right idea.
Orth looked thoughtful.
Very far away.
Fanry doesn't lack courage, Qui-Gon said. Or will. She may have a great deal to offer when she's grown. What's become of Cady?
Ah, clever girl, that one. She's accepted our offer to send her to the school of her choice. She picked a leadership academy on Alderaan. I hope she'll return someday, but frankly, I wouldn't blame her if she never set foot on Pygel again.
Orth folded her hands on her desk.
I suppose you and Kenobi will be off then.
Qui-Gon nodded,
after saying a few goodbyes.
First he went to see Pax and Rahara aboard the Merricks. To judge by their joyful moods and newly intimate body language, Qui-Gon thought that after the escape from the Leverage, it was possible their relationship had progressed past business partners. It was none of his affair, but it was good to see them happy.
As insufferable as I've found your behavior on multiple occasions, Pax said, I find I shall miss you.
From you, Pax, I suspect that's a great compliment.
Qui-Gon turned to Rahara.
Governor Orth tells me the refugees from the Leverage have begun traveling off-planet.
She nodded, leaning against the Merrick's door.
Some of them have home planets to go to. Others have been offered funds to help settle newly inhabited worlds and are taking the Republic up on it. At least a couple of them want to stay here in Pygel. Despite the bad memories they must have, it's beautiful here.
Beautiful or not, we've tarried here too long already.
Pax sighed.
The money we earn selling fools, Kaiba, will only just cover the repairs to the facet. Important as this trip has been for us, it has utterly failed to be profitable.
About that.
Qui-Gon reached toward his belt and opened a small pouch he always kept there.
I thought this might help make up for, shall we say, sunk costs.
When he held it out in his palm to catch the light, both Pax and Rahara gasped.
It was Rahara who said, Is that a Mustafar fire diamond?
Qui-Gon nodded.
Not as valuable as a piece of Merrick, surely, but it ought to more than cover your time here on Pygel.
And would if we remained here another 3 years.
Pax looked at Qui-Gon in consternation.
And you're just giving it to us. Are you sure?
For one moment, Qui-Gon remembered when it had been given to him, 20 years ago on Felucia. What it had meant, why it had been so precious that he'd kept it close every day since. But he didn't need the diamond to preserve that within his heart. In the end, the memories were what mattered. Qui-Gon dropped the diamond into Rahara's hand.
Yes, I'm sure. Finally, he went to bid farewell to Rael Averroes. Rael still lived in the Regent's quarters, mostly because nobody else had expressed any need for them yet. It looked as though he was packing to leave, though given the mess, it was hard to tell.
Figured I'd see you soon. Rael stubbed out a death stick. Your Padawan came by earlier. He's a good kid. Someday he'll be a great Jedi Knight. Yes, he will.
Qui-Gon put one hand on Rael's shoulder.
Have you spoken to Fanry?
Shaking his head, Rael said,
Maybe someday. Not anytime soon.
He sighed.
I guess the Council was right after all.
Qui-Gon didn't follow.
About what?
Rael sat atop a pile of not-quite-folded clothes on the unmade bed.
About how love warps our judgment. I cared so damn much about that little girl. But the way I went about it convinced her I didn't care at all. But all of it was about Nim, and none of it was about her.
He sighed heavily.
Maybe someday she'll see it clearer. Maybe I will, too.
When are you traveling back to Coruscant? Qui-Gon asked. The sooner Rael had a new mission, the better, he thought.
Rael shrugged. Not sure. I'm not even sure I am going back. Maybe this path... Maybe it's not for me.
It had been shocking when Dooku left the Order. But as good a Jedi Knight as Rael was, in some ways, being a Jedi had never been an easy fit. It would be a shame to lose him, but not a surprise.
What would you do? Still thinking it over. Talking to some old friends, you know.
Rael looked up at Qui-Gon with a sad smile.
When you're on the Jedi Council, don't forget me. Impossible,
Qui-Gon said, before hugging Rael goodbye. Obi-Wan sat in the stable, scratching his Viractyl's head. He'd only ridden it once, but would miss it all the same. When his master appeared, Obi-Wan patted the Viractyl goodbye and went to Qui-Gon's side.
Are we ready to leave, then?
We are.
They walked together across the grounds, listening to the ocean as they returned to the Corvette. Obi-Wan spoke first.
I suppose you're eager to return to Coruscant, to accept the Council's offer.
If it still holds.
Qui-Gon shook his head ruefully.
After my refusal to sign the treaty, I'm not sure it does.
It does,
Obi-Wan said. When Qui-Gon looked at him in confusion, he explained,
When I called the Council to tell them what was going on, one of the Masters asked whether they should rethink your invitation. Yoda said they wouldn't, that the invitation wouldn't be undone. And everyone always says, as Yoda goes, so goes the Council.
That's not invariably true, Qui-Gon said. But you've given me much to think about.
What was there to think about? Then Obi-Wan had a thought.
Are you trying to choose my future, Master?
Qui-Gon nodded.
As a matter of fact, I am.
Coruscant, hectic as it could be, was still home. Qui-Gon felt refreshed, even comfortable by the time he presented himself to the Council.
Hasty you were, to risk so much on the strength of a dream,
said Yoda.
But a true future it revealed.
Not exactly, said Eeth Koth. If I understand Padawan Kenobi's report correctly, Qui-Gon believed Fanry would be the victim in the incident, not the perpetrator.
That's the most interesting thing about this to me,
Qui-Gon said,
because I've come to realize that I was not only meant to have the vision, I was also meant to misinterpret it.
The Council members traded glances. It was Mace Windu who said,
What do you mean?
I mean, had I been on the dais with Fanry and Darren, they would have tried to sabotage my lightsaber instead of Obi-Wan's. But Fanry only knew how Obi-Wan's works. Mine has a very different inner mechanism. If she'd done to my lightsaber what she did to his, I wouldn't have wound up with a modified weapon. I wouldn't have had any weapon at all. Darren would have cut me down. Obi-Wan would almost certainly have remained on the planet's surface and the conflict above Paijul, rather than being swiftly defused with no loss of life, could well have sparked a war. Yoda's ears swiveled.
Sure you are of this?
As certain as the Force allows, said Qui-Gon. He knew now that the prophecies were real. What he had seen, the ancient mystics had seen. The Force meant for him to understand this. He knew also that he had seen the Kyber that wasn't Kyber, which meant the days of prophecy were at hand. Everything would change. It might even be in Qui-Gon's lifetime. In those days, slaves could be freed. Peace could be won. Qui-Gon knew that was less certain, but he chose to believe. Mace Windu seemed ready to move on from the topic. The time has come to address your invitation to the Jedi Council. That invitation stands. While some felt your behavior to be rash, others recognize that you perceived something extraordinary through the Force. That ability is one that can only enhance this Council's deliberations. You honor me, Qui-Gon said. I have only the greatest respect for every one of you. So I hope you'll understand that this isn't a repudiation of you. But I must decline to join the Jedi Council. Silence. Qui-Gon wasn't sure anyone had turned down an invitation before, at least not in the past several centuries. Several of the Council members stared at him, and Poli Dapatian kept blinking hard, as though he wasn't sure he was seeing correctly. Mace regained his aplomb before most of the others.
May we ask why?
Qui-Gon knew the Council to be wrong about many things. He felt that allowed the Jedi Order to become a sort of Chancellor's police, rather than concentrating on knowing the Force. Yes, they were wise to refuse to rule, but unwise to simply accept the status quo. Short-sighted, to lose touch with the living Force by spending so much of their time and energy on enforcing laws that could as easily be left to civilian authorities. Immoral, to refuse to act against evils such as slavery. But none of these were the reasons he'd chosen to decline. My relationship to the Force has changed, Qui-Gon said. I wish to be silent for a while. To surrender to it. To accept whatever the Force brings. Joining the Council would take me far away from that goal. But this is the path I must follow. That, in the end, was why the prophecies weren't dangerous to him, not the same way they'd been to others who'd been led to darkness. The danger came in thinking that knowing the future became a form of control over it. Finally, Qui-Gon understood it was the exact opposite. Knowing the future meant surrendering to fate. Surrendering to the ebb and flow of life. Only through that surrender could the Force be truly known. After the Council meeting, Qui-Gon set out to find Obi-Wan. Of all places, he turned out to be in the gardens. That gave them a quiet place to sit together while Qui-Gon explained what he had decided and why. Obi-Wan was staggered at first, but he came to understand very quickly. I suppose in the end you couldn't agree with the Council, even about your being on the Council, he said. But if this is the path you're called to, then this is the path you must follow. Which comes to the question of whether you'll follow it with me. Qui-Gon took a deep breath. I realize we've had difficulties. But this mission changed things, I think, and for the better. If you would prefer another master, I won't be offended. If it were up to me, though, we would continue on as we are. Slowly, Obi-Wan began to smile. You know, Master, I've realized. I wouldn't learn nearly as much from someone who always agreed with me. Qui-Gon grinned back, and they clasped hands, more truly partners than ever before. It was nearly midnight when Avaros's comm unit chimed. He groaned, ready to yell at whoever thought this was a great time to call, then realized this was the communication he'd been waiting for. Avros hit the holoprojector, and a beam of light took the form of Count Dooku.
Rael,
Dooku said, his voice deeper and graver than ever.
Have you thought more about my proposal?
With a short laugh, Avros said,
Like I could have thought of anything else.
You would learn much here on Sereno with me. You have yet to even imagine the truth of the Force, but you could find the way. There are so many things I've learned that I could teach you. Far more than they ever told us at the temple. You will gain more understanding, more power than you can yet comprehend. If we stood together, we would be unconquerable.
Glad you think so, Avros said. But actually, I've decided. I'm going back to Coruscant. Not sure what the Council's gonna do with me, but I guess I'll find out.
Dooku drew himself up.
Still stiff as a plank, Rael thought.
Why would you choose the path that leads to weakness? The path that is destined to fail?
We don't choose the light because we want to win.
Avros smiled sadly.
We choose it because it is the light.
With that, he snapped the projector off, and Dooku disappeared.
Years after, Queen Amidala entered the shrine, dipping her head so that her elaborate hairstyle wouldn't scrape the ceiling. When Obi-Wan looked up, she knelt carefully by his side.
It's nightfall.
Her voice was gentle, patient, like a woman far older than her years.
Are you ready? Am I ready to see my master consumed by the flames? To know I will never see him again? Give me one more moment.
Amidala pressed her hand to his forearm, then went back outside. Within minutes, Qui-Gon's pyre would be carried outside and burned. It was the proper end for a Jedi, and it would be accompanied by the greatest honors. Qui-Gon's death was the will of the Force, but Obi-Wan could reconcile himself to none of it. Qui-Gon lay on a white cloth, his face as placid as it had once been in the depths of meditation. Obi-Wan had chosen not to dress him in a new tunic, but to allow those at the funeral to see the burned mark where the Sith Lord's lightsaber had pierced him through. It was the only hint of the violence of Qui-Gon's death.
The first Jedi killed by a Sith in 1,000 years, he thought numbly. That fate should never have fallen to anyone. But if it had to happen, why didn't it happen to me instead of you?
Obi-Wan remembered that, for the first few years of his apprenticeship, he and Qui-Gon hadn't gotten along. But he remembered it the same way he remembered dates in Jedi history, as flat facts with little life to them. Instead, when Obi-Wan thought on his time as Qui-Gon's Padawan, he always thought of the years after that mission to Pychel. The years when they had become both partners and friends. He'd expected to go through the trials, to be knighted in the proper ceremony with Qui-Gon at his side, and for the two of them to remain friends for the rest of their lives. Instead, Obi-Wan had become a Jedi Knight that morning via a hasty field promotion. He would never again have Qui-Gon's advice, support, or companionship. In fact, his only inheritance from Qui-Gon was rather more complicated. He glanced to the door of the shrine. Though night was falling, Obi-Wan could make out the silhouette of little Anakin Skywalker. After Pygel, Qui-Gon's devotion to the prophecies had never faltered. Still, Obi-Wan would never have guessed that Qui-Gon would confidently identify the Chosen One as a small, enslaved boy. Less would he have expected to be abruptly cast aside in favor of that same boy, a wound in his relationship with Qui-Gon that had only just begun to heal before his master had died.
Obi-Wan understood Qui-Gon's reasons, but he hadn't shared his master's conviction that Anakin was the chosen one.
And yet,
Obi-Wan thought, maybe this is as the Force wills it. Qui-Gon came to believe in the prophecies again in Pygil, where he first began arguing that the Jedi should push the Republic harder on combating slavery. Never had Qui-Gon stopped arguing this to anyone who would listen. But he had never betrayed his mandate, not even on Tatooine.
If Anakin is the chosen one, and he keeps his promise to free the slaves, it will fulfill all of Qui-Gon's hopes.
With his dying breath, Qui-Gon had asked Obi-Wan to train Anakin as a Jedi. Most Jedi Knights didn't become masters until years after they'd passed their own trials, the years during which they got to forge their own path. For Obi-Wan to take a Padawan after having been a Jedi Knight for a few hours was unprecedented, surely. Possibly also unwise. But Obi-Wan had promised. It was the last thing he'd ever said to Qui-Gon. So it had to be true.
I will train him, Master, he said, bowing his head low until it almost touched Qui-Gon's still hand. I will do everything for him that you would have done.
Qui-Gon had faith that Anakin Skywalker was the chosen one. Obi-Wan would have to find faith in it too. Looking at Qui-Gon's face for the last time, Obi-Wan whispered, I choose to believe. This is Jonathan Davis. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged production of Star Wars, Master and Apprentice by Claudia Gray. This program was produced and directed by Kevin Thompson. Executive producer, Nick Martorelli. Star Wars, Master and Apprentice is a production of Lucasfilm Limited and registered or trademarked where indicated. Copyright 2019. All rights reserved. Used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music master production copyright 2007, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Penguin Random House audio presentation. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.